Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Text 26. Tesham satam veda vitana murtir.
Tesham satam veda vitana murtir.
Brahma vidayatma gunanuvadam. Vinaja Buyo vibhut vibhut vinaja buyo vibhudo dayaya gajendra lilo jalam avivesha tesham of them satam of the great devotees veda all knowledge Vitanamurti, the form of expansion. Brahma, Vedic sound. Avatarya, knowing it well. Atma, of himself. Guna Anuvadam, transcendental glorification. Vinaja, resounding. Vuya, again. Vibhuta, of the transcendentally learned. Udayaya, for the elevation or benefit. Gajendra Lila, playing like an elephant. Jalam, the water. Avivesha, entered. Translation. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again. In reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Purport. The form of the Lord in any shape is always transcendental and full of knowledge and mercy. The Lord is the destroyer of all material contamination, because his form is personified Vedic knowledge. All the Vedas worship the transcendental form of the Lord. In the Vedic mantras, the devotees request the Lord to remove the glaring effulgence because it covers his real face. That is the version of the Isha Upanishad. The Lord has no material form, but his form is always understood in terms of the Vedas. The Vedas are said to be the breath of the Lord, and that breath was inhaled by Brahma, the original student of the Vedas. The breathing from the nostril of Brahma caused the appearance of Lord Boar, and therefore the Boar incarnation of the Lord is the personified Vedas. The glorification of the incarnation by the sages on the higher planets consisted of factual Vedic hymns. Whenever there is glorification of the Lord, it is to be understood that Vedic mantras are being rightly vibrated. The Lord was therefore pleased when such Vedic mantras were chanted. And to encourage his pure devotees, he roared once more and entered the water to rescue the submerged earth. Om Aganatirmidandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. First, let us consider our bias against hearing these inconceivable deeds and forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because we're contaminated with impersonalism, when we hear about Lord Boar, Shukara Rupa, a boring carnation. Something in us tells us this is fantastic, like a fairy tale or mythology. Yet, when we hear from the intellectual leaders of human society that matter can give rise to life and consciousness, that sounds plausible to us, doesn't it? We're willing to invest into matter a chincha shakti. But we will not do that with a person, even the supreme person. Every day in our daily experience, we see examples of human beings with shakti. This is why people like sports, especially here in Australia. On my first plane trip to Australia on the airplane, one man was sitting next to me and he sought to introduce me to the rasa of the country. One thing you got to understand is here we do not care so much for the politicians. We do not care so much for the intellectuals. The sports persons are our heroes. They are the Mahajans. That means people are attracted to prowess, to personal ability, to extraordinary displays of potency. So just see what attracts us. We're attracted to the qualities and activities performed by a person. We're attracted to beauty. We're attracted to power. We're attracted to wealth, strength. But why is it that we deny these things in the Supreme Absolute Truth? Where does this bias come from? And we're so biased with that contamination that we're willing to invest in matter. Things that no one's ever seen before. Things that there is no process to verify. Matter can do the impossible. The universe began from a random fluctuation of nothingness. And because nothingness is inherently unstable, therefore there was some agitation. And from that came some kind of singularity, so dense, it's beyond human comprehension. And then, over so many billions of years, what we have today all evolved. We could consider, well, that sounds plausible because after all, so many great scientists trot this forward. Whereas, when we hear about the Leela of Lord Bohr, the pastimes of Varahadev, it sounds like Greek mythology. It sounds like maybe some Aboriginal mythology. But why has it become primitive to ascribe inconceivable deeds to a person? Where do we get that bias from? This shows that we are contaminated by impersonalism. We're willing to listen and accept that the ultimate source is impersonal, has no form, no qualities, no activities. Although everything that we do in our life involves attraction to personal form, qualities, and activities. But then again, because that attraction on the mundane plane leads to frustration, we think that in the ultimate, there can't be form, activities, qualities. Because even though we're attracted to those things have let us down because they're temporary, because they're not satisfying. Therefore, let us deny our attraction for qualities, forms, and activities. Even though we are attracted. Let's deny it. And let's speculate, let us posit that there, in the ultimate reality, is no form, personality, qualities. So that's one kind of speculation. Then the other, of course, is even worse. That there is nothing spiritual. There is simply matter which is directed by physical laws of nature. There is not one thing that exists that is not material. Matter can do everything. Give it sufficient time. That's the thing, time. Of course, where did time come from? Oh, well, we're getting to that. It's amazing what we'll accept because we're envious of Krishna. Now, why should the Supreme Personality of Godhead take the form of a boar? Have you ever wondered about that? And he's glorified for it. Keshava Drita Shukara Rupa Jai Jagadisha Hare Jai De Nusami in his Dashavatar prayers. Glorifies the Lord in the form of a boar. Such a lowly creature. In human society, a dog eater is considered to be the lowest. Even lower than a cow eater. Amongst animals, the pig is considered to be the lowest because the pig will eat anything, even stool. How can the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supreme Pure, take the form of a wild pig? That's basically what a boar is. And be glorified. Why does the Supreme Personality of Godhead do that? For his own pleasure. Sometimes you see human beings imitating animals for fun. Parents will do that with their little children. I'm a horsey, get on my back. Or I'm a cow, moo, moo. Yes, we have some parents here who you have done like that. Which animals did you imitate? A horse. Any other? Which animal?
Birds.
Yes. So when the Supreme Personality Godhead takes the form of an animal, oh, this is mythological. This is too much. I don't know if I can accept all this. The Bhagavatam gets a bit too much sometimes. Yet, in our own activities, we see what is at least temporarily attractive and what at least sort of gives some semblance of pleasure. We sport in that way. Why can't the Supreme Personality of Godhead sport and take the form of whatever animal he likes? Of course, we have to understand what the rupa, the form of the Lord is composed of. Nothing material. The same bodily ingredients as Radha Krishna are there in the Shukara Rupa, Lord Varahadeva. Form composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Why not take the form of a boar? Especially since a boar with its snout can stick its nose anywhere. To rescue the earth from the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, Lord Varaha enjoyed the form of a boar, sniffing out, where's the earth? It's fun! And then, lifting the earth on his tusks, he's enjoying it. And then, when, you know, boars, wild pigs, they're covered with bristle hairs. And because he dived into the ocean, his hairs, his bristles, were covered with water. So he shook, just like a wild pig, he shook his body to shake off the water. And all the upper planets, the sages on the upper planets, were so eager to receive the drops of water shaken by the body of Lord Boar. Normally, the most contaminated thing is water from the body of a pig. In English, there's even that expression, hogwash. They don't use that in India, do they? Hogwash means water that's washed the pig. So if someone tells you something, and instead of saying, like they do in India, nonsense, so nonsense, you say, hogwash, hogwash. The water from the body of a pig is considered to be a totally contaminated, dirty. So, we have here the sages in the upper planets, eager to receive those drops shaken from the body of Lord Varaha, knowing that they would be purified when those drops touched them. At first, there was some doubt. Who is this? Brahma himself was a bit bewildered. What's come out of my nostril? What's come out of my nostril started out to be so small, and now this form has expanded to half the size of the universe. So there was some discussion amongst the sages, as we heard a few days ago, struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky. Brahma, with great brahmanas like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. This is life on the topmost planets in the universe. They're not arguing about the economy. They're not arguing about this politician or that politician. They're arguing about what is this inconceivable sight we're seeing. Brahma, being the most intelligent person in the universe, understood these extraordinary symptoms that I'm seeing, these extraordinary characteristics mean the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm pretty sure that's what this appearance of the boar is. Then you see reciprocation by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upon Brahma's positing that, this must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I'm almost completely sure. What was the reciprocation? Lord Boar roared tumultuously, letting everyone know, it's me, yes, you're right. Bhakti always has reciprocation. Often I hear from devotees that, oh, I've been chanting, I've been serving, but I don't know. It's difficult. It's hard. So I explained that even if you think it's difficult and hard, just think of what the payoff is, what the reward is. You have to be properly selfish. As stated in the beginning of Nectar Devotion, anyone engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the first-class expert in self-interest. That was a verse that I memorized as a new devotee to keep myself focused. First-class expert in self-interest. In other words, if you're going to be selfish, at least know how to do it right. So I explain to devotees when they bring this point up to me, I've been struggling lately. The taste is not there. I don't know what my future will be. Say, just look at the reward that's due to you. Even if it's true that you're going through a struggle. And I don't immediately agree that it's hardship. But let's just take it temporarily that it is a hardship. But look at the payoff. And remember material existence? Certainly a struggle. But what's the payoff? So you have to take your pick. Even if you want to consider bhakti a hardship and a struggle. It's so hard to dance. You have to dance when you don't feel like it, otherwise everyone thinks you're in Maya. It's peer pressure to dance. Oh, it's misery, isn't it? Real severe austerity. And you have to take prasad. then you have to figure out how to use your energies for Krishna. It's very difficult. Of course, what happens in material existence? You're busy slaving with your senses. For what purpose? You're undergoing austerities. You're undergoing hardship. Just like now in the USA, there's a big expose about what it's like to work for Amazon.com. The CEO of Amazon.com is, which also has a website portal for Australia, by the way, the CEO is the fifth richest man in the world. They have like 50,000 employees, so many IT people, and he just drives them mercilessly. They have software in which any person working can complain about a coworker. You can all do it anonymously, just on your computer. So-and-so, I think, is not working hard enough. So everyone's living in that state of siege. Like, but you don't know whether the complaint will be part of your permanent record. But the corporate culture there is to just keep everyone thinking, I've got to do more, I've got to do more, I've got to do more. Someone's going to surpass me. They're people, executives, IT people, everyone. They log in 80 hours a week. They get emails at 2 a.m. in the morning, which they have to answer. And if they don't answer, then they get a text message on their phone. You got an email. It's now 2:15 a.m. You haven't answered. That's part of the work culture. Most people can't handle working in such a situation. And they're told that this is Darwinian evolution, survival of the fittest. We take in so many people to work for us, and then we spit out most of them, and only the best are left. If you want a job, this is what you have to go through. It's the way it is. People are willing to undergo that. But because the purpose is one's own sense gratification, it's all right. But any austerity in bhakti, well, it's for Krishna. And, Just see how contaminated we are. We're willing to suffer for the material energy. Slave for the material energy. But we're hesitant to engage in Krishna's service. Even though Krishna gives reciprocation, just like he's done with Brahma and the sages, he's roaring tumultuously. It's me. I'm confirming. This is the value of Shabda Brahma, transcendental sound. Our chanting of Hare Krishna, our chanting in Kirtan, is all about reciprocation. But we have to have an open attitude to perceive all that. If we forget that chanting japa, if we forget that kirtan is all about reciprocating with the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in sound, then everything becomes mechanical. And gradually, we become so insensitive that we give up the greatest jewel that we can ever have. Krishna is not heartless. There is reciprocation in bhakti. We just have to be trained to see it. Krishna is showing his care, even to the newest devotee. As soon as you try to take shelter of Krishna, the reciprocation and care is there. But we may not be educated enough, skillful enough to see that. Just like a little child may not fully understand all that the mother or father is doing. Certainly a little child will understand the father's austerities going off to work. He just knows daddy leaves every morning and comes back in the evening. As the child gets older, he begins to understand That it's not simply the mother who's performing austerities with the sleepless nights, the sleep deprivation. It's the father also. As we mature in bhakti, we become aware more of what Krishna is doing in reciprocation, and our gratitude begins to increase. What is life without gratitude? Even for material life, there must be gratitude. Otherwise, the emotions become crazy, become heartless. And certainly in bhakti, because we're dealing with Krishna and his service, we should be overwhelmed by gratitude. You can come before the deities and ask, what am I doing here? This is amazing. I am here chanting Hare Krishna. I am practicing the pinnacle of the yoga system, me? A life of bhakti means we're overwhelmed with gratitude. And so the sages are offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And again, the Lord roars. And that roar echoes in all directions. He's roaring in response to the prayers by the most elevated brahmanas who reside in the upper planetary system. Janalok, Tapalok, Satyalok. The roar of Lord Bor is the same as the sound of the Vedic hymns. And therefore the sages reply with chants from the Vedas. In this way, real life goes on. Glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his inconceivable activities. During Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he would suddenly take on the ecstasy of various avatars. Once at a devotee's house, Lord Chaitanya wanted to hear the Vishnu Sahasranama, thousand names of Vishnu. And the devotee did so. I think it was Srivas Thakur. And then he recited the name Nrisingha. And immediately Lord Chaitanya became totally absorbed in the bhava, the ecstasy of Lord Nrisingadev. And he grabbed a stick and ran outside and was running throughout the streets looking for atheists to kill him. Roaring like Nrisingadev. And somehow or other he subdued himself and he came back to the house of the devotee a little transcendentally morose. It's an offense to scare people unnecessarily. I've done an offense. And the devotee told him, no. Anyone who hears your name immediately becomes free from all offenses if they actually hear your name. Another time, Lord Chaitanya was at the house of, he was going to the house of Murari Gupta. And as he entered the house, he cried out, Shukara, Shukara, wild boar, and he immediately took the ecstasy and the form of Lord Varaha. And he climbed on the shoulders of Murari Gupta in that boar form. In the temple room of Murari Gupta was a beautiful water pot, like a kettle, we call it. And Lord Chaitanya picked up that kettle. In other words, the kettle was the earth. And Lord Chaitanya was in the form of a boar, and he picked up that kettle, demonstrating how Lord Varaha picked up the earth. And then Murari Gupta began to offer prayers. Lord Chaitanya was inciting him, offer prayers, offer prayers. Of course, Murari Gupta's first attitude was, who am I to offer prayers? Anantadev has never gotten to the end of reciting your glories. How can I such a lowly person recite prayers in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But since you've asked, I'll do that. Our life is all about glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we become more ecstatic in bhakti, we eagerly seize any opportunity. We're expert, just like a businessman is expert at seizing an opportunity for wealth. Or a lusty person is expert at seizing any opportunity for recruiting for sense gratification. Similarly, the devotee is also eager, avaricious, even greedy for any opportunity to glorify Krishna. We glorify all the forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. None of them have any material characteristics. Following in the footsteps of the Acharyas, we relish the activities of Lord Varaha. We don't skip over this section of Bhagavatam. Oh, the wild pig avatar. Nope, not for me. Let's go right to Braj Leela. But the point of the Bhagavatam is that if you don't understand Lord Varaha, you won't understand Braj Leela. The Bhagavatam is carefully preparing you. Now you may think, oh no, I understand when I read about Vrindavan, I know that Krishna and Balaram, they seem like little boys, they're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know. But what is the depth of our realization? The best thing is to go through the process as given by the Acharyas and not be temporarily paralyzed by premature conceptions of our greatness. I'm going to be a 10th canto, but the other cantos, I don't know. We do things in a prescribed way. Lord Chaitanya taught about Srimad Bhagavatam two things, Chaitanya Charitamrita says. He taught Bhagavatam Tattva, the supreme science of the Bhagavatam, and he taught Bhagavatam Rasa. He taught the taste of Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya's emphasis was that Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God. It's Krishna appearing. Therefore, understand it as tattva, understand it as rasa. Because of the order of Lord Chaitanya, we're sitting here hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, a mundaner cannot understand. I don't think you're going to be able, especially if you're not from India, but even if you are from India, you're not going to be able to call up your parents and say, this morning we heard about God as the wild pig incarnation. It takes education to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth. If someone is uneducated, uninformed, how can you explain the glories of the avatars to them? They need Bhagavad Gita to give them a foundation. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, although I'm unborn, although my transcendental body never deteriorates, although I'm the Lord of all conscious beings, I still come to this world, but I come my own way, through my own all-spiritual mechanism. We should feel overwhelmed by the need to understand Krishna. Even though we'll never understand Krishna completely, still, it's our responsibility in love, in developing love, to understand Krishna as much as possible. Are there any questions? Yes.
Just in our daily life, how do we know if that's
Well, in case you haven't noticed, we have happiness police around here. And if they see that you're being happy and they're not sure what the nature of your happiness is, they're going to take care of you. We don't want anything other than pure happiness going on here. No, devotees are progressive. You're making progress. There are various levels of bhakti. We're not going to persecute devotees for feeling happy in devotional service. Are you looking a little happy? Is it pure? Have to be practical, just like those of you who have experienced a household life and developing a relationship from the beginning. From the very first stages, in the very first stages of the relationship, were you like analyzing, how selfless is your love really going to be? No, you understand things have to develop. So similarly, in bhakti, patience is required, as Rupa Goswami said. And certainly, a devotee is always holding up his inner state to Krishna, to the devotees, to the spiritual master. Is what I'm feeling all about my gratification, or is it about giving pleasure to Krishna? And that is an art, that's a science, that's a culture that's always developing. So we're not going to persecute devotees for feeling happy. Oh, I had some good pizza prasad yesterday. Prabhu, that's selfish. You're not thinking of Krishna's senses. No. We want devotees to develop in bhakti. It's eternal. So yes, as you mature, you start to ask yourself more and more, am I satisfied because Krishna is satisfied? Or am I doing something for my own satisfaction? As we often explain, there is a very subtle difference between karma yoga and full bhakti. Karma yoga means I'll offer the results to Krishna, but I am attached to acting in a certain way. Full bhakti means I'm not attached to the results and I'm not attached to what I do. It's everything for Krishna, however Krishna wants it. Whatever Krishna wants, wherever Krishna wants. We're aiming for that goal. But it takes practice. So please, allow yourself and allow other devotees to be progressive and develop. You can come before the deities every morning and pray that, how can I be your unmotivated servant? And then be patient and determined about developing that. Look for examples of devotees who have dedicated everything for Krishna's pleasure year after year. Become inspired by that example. Yes, that's what I want. And the super soul in your heart takes note. Oh, you want to be like such and such devotee? I'll help. It's all about desire. And desire develops in the association of devotees who are dedicated to Krishna's service. This is why association is so important. It rubs off on you. Oh, you have sacrificed so nicely for Krishna. I would also like to be like that. And you pick it up. It's contagious, infectious. So give yourself a chance to progressively develop. Yes.
Stages of development. And the first one is Radha Madan Mohan, who we're supposed to pray to for attraction attraction of service as opposed to attraction of material energy or for material enjoyment. So, and then there's Radha
Govinda.
Radha Govinda, then Radha Bhaktivinoda, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, how do we practically apply that system that Prabhupada says is kind of integral to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas? You know, in worshipping Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda, Radha Gopinath. How do we apply that practically in our worship, say, Radha Balaba, you know, the local, at the local level of performing devotional service? And my understanding is that Krishna's, that Prabhupada is saying, you know, first of all, we've got to become attracted to the service and become absorbed in devotional service so that we can then go to higher stages of devotion. So how do we practically apply that process in our day-to-day practice, say, here in Melbourne?
Here in Melbourne, you're serving Shishi Radha Krishna in the mood of Shishi Lakshmi Narayan, and you have the perfect and complete Supreme Personality of Godhead here. Therefore, as I was telling a devotee yesterday, the real understanding of being in the being associated with the temple is, as Srila Prabhupada famously said, if you pledge all your activities for Krishna's pleasure, if you understand and act as with the knowledge that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, then you're not in Melbourne. You're in Vaikuntha. More specifically, you're in Goloka Vrindavan. So we have the full presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we can here express our desire to be attracted to devotional service. We can express our desire to advance in devotional service, and we can express our desire to taste the fruits of devotional service. See, Kaviraj Goswami is based in Vrindavan, as are and were so many Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So he's giving the system in Vrindavan. Certainly we can worship that system from afar. We can think of Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda, Shri Radha Gopina. But Kaviraj Goswami is laying down the praxis, the spiritual practices, in that statement there. He's laying it down for the residents of Vrindavan. We're not shortchanged because we just have Radha Balaba here. But when you go to Vrindavan, you can follow that system. Vrindavan is essential for Vaishnavas, especially followers of Lord Chaitanya. And then gradually you start to understand that Mayapur is Gupta Vrindavan, it's hidden Vrindavan. So all these secrets are there waiting to be revealed to us. Anything else? Yes. Well, one of the offenses is not to be attentive. Our main preoccupation in life is how to increase the quality of our japa. And when that worry is always on your mind, that's a sign that you're making progress. Otherwise, you wouldn't care. And I mumble my rounds, what comes out, hey. What kind of relationship or hope for a relationship is that? None of you wanted that kind of relationship for yourself. Householders can just imagine, you know, the husband gets up in the morning, the wife says, how are you? Yeah, I am what I am. What comes out of my mouth comes out of my mouth. You get what you get, leave it at that. I say these examples to show you how common sense it is once we become personalists, how to treat Krishna personally. But our problem is impersonalism. So yes, when our japa deteriorates, it means we're moving away from Krishna. And we should try to find out what the cause is, and we may need help. But we're always preoccupied because we're followers of Lord Chaitanya. Dadaivam idrisa mahajani nanuraga. I'm so unfortunate. I have no raga, no attraction for the holy name. Even though Krishna is the same as his name, Nijasarva Shakti. All his potencies are there. This is our eternal preoccupation because we're following Lord Chaitanya. We never think, great japa, I'm on to it. The mood of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan is what? Krishna is always just ahead. They never feel like now we've got Krishna. It's always, hey Rod, hey Braja Devi K, Chalalita, hey Nanda Sunakata. Queen of Vrindavan, where are you? Oh Lalita, oh Vishaka, oh son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you? So as we progress in bhakti, our japa takes on more and more of the mood of separation from Krishna. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Gorakh.